You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So maybe the hard truth is that sometimes you have to truly prioritize and say no to things that you want to do because it destroys the ultimate thing you are trying to build.
Why did I become an executive coach? I saw lots of great people fail to get ahead at work, while their much less talented peers blew right past them. That made me furious, but also curious. What were great people getting wrong? It came down to helping them re-examine what drove success and then helping them make critical shifts, one hard truth at a time.
Feel like you're doing everything you were told, but you're not moving ahead at work nor having the impact you seek? Then welcome to 97% Effective with Michael Winderoth, where we skip feel-good, happy talk and engage experts in pointed conversations about what it really takes to move the needle at work and your career. So if you feel stalled or frustrated or seek that extra edge as you move to the next level, then look no further. This is the Hard Truths Playbook you never got.
Hi, I'm Michael Winderoth, and you're listening to 97% Effective. Clients I work with have similar aspirations. They want to do meaningful work, make an impact, continually learn. They want autonomy, financial freedom, and be sought after for their expertise, all while having free time to spend with their loved ones and explore. Yet so many people struggle. Burnout, nonstop pressures in work and life. Many are challenged with how to pursue a passion that provides financial freedom and autonomy, and often they feel trapped in their companies. How do you get out of the rat race, be more in control, and get more of your ideal life? Today, we're going to discuss how my guest, Alvaro Fernandez, CEO of SharpBrains, did just that. Alvaro is a thought leader in brain fitness and applied neuroscience. Named a young global leader by the World Economic Forum, Alvaro has been featured on CNN and quoted in the New York Times, BBC, Wall Street Journal, you name it. He holds master's degrees in business and education from Stanford University, teaches at UC Berkeley's Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, and is the author of The Sharp Brain's Guide to Brain Fitness, How to Optimize Brain Health and Performance at Any Age. Most importantly is the platform that he created and that has propelled his success and amplified his impact, Sharp Brains, his company. What started, and these are my words, as a blog in the early 2000s, Sharp Brains has become a leading think tank and advisory on brain fitness that helps corporate clients and individuals around the globe. If you want practical tips, the latest on brain science research broken down for you, or how you can use that to help your organization, sharpbrains.com is a one-stop shop. Now, our focus today is how he built, grew, and leveraged Sharp Brains, turning a passion into a fantastic business where he's a recognized go-to thought leader. Most of all, it has, as I said before, enabled that ideal life, doing something that he loves, continually learning, spreading his impact. Sharp Brains is an amazing and creative example of what I call creating and leveraging a resource to build influence and amplify your impact. How did Alvaro do it? And what can we learn from that? Alvaro, welcome to 97% Effective. Very excited to have you on.
I'm super happy to be here, Mike. Thanks for the invite.
Alvaro, in my intro there, is there anything that you want to clarify or correct? I've known you for more than 20 years. I have followed Sharp Brains throughout these 20 years and the path you've taken. So I feel like I know you in the business, but is there anything there you want to just clarify or correct in the introduction?
No, but I would like to expand one thing that I just want to be very relevant to the rest of the conversation, which is obviously I'm from Spain, as some of your very smart listeners will detect in my accent. But I have an undergrad and master's in economics. And it is relevant because from the beginning, I saw the brain as an asset, as a resource. And that's why I started to pay attention to all this neuroscience, everything that we're going to be starting to talk in a minute. But the frame of reference for me personally was economics. And what's the most important asset? Well, that's the brains and minds we have. So that's an interesting point of maybe not clarification, but of context.
Yeah, very important context. And to help us set some of the context here, paint a quick picture. Sharp Brains kind of at the inception, this is the early 2000s versus Sharp Brains now. So we get a little bit of sense of the 20-year journey then and now, and then we're going to use this episode to connect the dots of how you did that.
Well, that's a quite broad question. So what is common from the very beginning around 2005 and now is that we have created an organization that learns, that evolves, that adapts to add value to the industry and to society in the way that is relevant in that moment. So what is common is that from the very beginning, we did not want to create yet one more software company or app or technology company, because many, many people were already doing that. Instead, what I thought was really missing is exactly what you said so well, the platform that helps advance a whole field. So that's the secret sauce, in a sense, of everything we have done. And that answers many of your questions, like how come we became the go-to? How come we were able to do so many things? Because we truly wanted to add value to a very important industry in that unique way. Now, the ways we added value have evolved a lot. In the very beginning, it was basically a consulting company. So I found some companies worldwide, some universities that were doing super, super interesting things. And I was in the Bay Area, so I could approach them and say, hey, maybe I can help you find new partners or new investors or new ways to conduct new research. So in the very beginning was consulting, which was a very good way to help fund the company in the beginning without having to raise external money. So it was a combination of the consulting and the blog, as you mentioned. And the blog was very popular. It is, but I mean, now there's many blogs, but 20 years ago, there were few of them, especially in our area. So it was a way first for me to share a lot of what I was learning. I was talking to many scientists. I was talking to many experts. I was learning a lot. But at some point, one investor named Zach Lynch told me, hey, all this thing is super interesting. Why don't you share it with the universe? So I created a blog, originally through WordPress, which was one of the first platforms, to share a lot of interviews with people, and people loved it. So that the initial point of blog and consulting was the very beginning of the engine of visibility, of credibility, of adding value. And if I fast forward, I mean, obviously there's been different stages, but what we have built on top of that is a lot of different things that, again, make sense to add value. I don't want to replicate anything that anyone else is doing. I'm always thinking with our advisors, with our network, well, how can we add value? Some of the big things that we have done to add value, first was a series of market reports that summarized the technology, the investments, the patents, the research, every 2 or 3 years. So everyone who was interested in the industry, either from the supply side or the demand side or the investment side, could get a good state of the art and then find potential partners, and then find potential ideas through that report. And the beautiful part of the report is that it is scalable. As opposed to consulting, where you need more and more consultants to do more and more projects, with the report, you produce a magnificent, excellent report. Many people will want to buy it, and that establishes your credibility and also brings very good revenues, because again, it is scalable, and it typically also brings some added consulting, because if a big company or a big investor buys the market report, often they will follow up with, well, we would like to bring you here for a day or two as an expert, maybe to review our business plan and to tell us what to do, what not to do based on your expertise, or if we are thinking what technology to license or to buy. Well, based on your report, how would you help us prioritize what is more relevant? So the report was a great platform. The report at some point led into a series of books, because we realized, well, the brain, everyone has a brain, right? So right now, if we are around 8 billion people on Earth, that means there's around 8 billion brains and minds, everyone. So a lot of the knowledge we had was very relevant for everyone, not just for startups or for tech companies or for investors. So we had a lot of knowledge. And then I partnered with a couple of authors and scientists to produce a few books. The first one, we also titled it The Cerebrain's Guide to Brain Fitness. That is now in the second edition. We really revamped everything. But the idea there was to maintain a kind of a Bible, I mean, being respectful, but being a sense of core reference for anyone who wants to understand what's the latest in how the brain and the mind work and how to improve it at any point in life, in a both rigorous way, but also very pragmatic, applied way. So the books also became very popular, and it was frankly very fun to think, well, how do I sequence a book, explain a book, add relevant examples, add relevant interviews, how in the end we help people summarize everything and personalize it for whatever is relevant for them. So it was a very interesting challenge to go through. And the book worked very well. And then we had a number of foreign publishers approach us to buy the rights to have it translated and localized to their respective languages. The first one, interestingly enough, was in Polish. So for some reason, they had a lot of interest in this there. Then in Japan, and Japan it went very well. Then in Spanish, where I'm from originally, so that I really wanted to do it, and it has also done very well. And in Portuguese, we were approached by other publishers in other countries, but they were looking maybe for a bit of an easier book, just a simple do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And frankly, for that, you don't need the book. So the book, we try to really explain things well and how to apply them. But books, I mean, really was very interesting to see how first, when we started, it was mostly print books. And then at some point, Kindle, through Amazon, Kindle sales started to really skyrocket and be very global. People buying from all over, from Australia, Canada, the UK, not only the US. So it was super interesting to see how you can publish good books and they sell everywhere. And the final component that we started doing is to organize a conference, because we knew all these, given all these reports, all these books, all this consulting. So we became like in the middle, like a trusted resource in the middle of an industry. So then the obvious thing was, well, let's create a conference. And first we started with, we created a conference within a bigger conference that in that era was called Games for Health. So it was a movement of how can we develop gaming that can improve some health outcomes. And inside that big conference, we created a track just on brain health and fitness. And that was, it worked very well. But quickly we realized that this industry is very distributed worldwide. Some incredible scientists are in Karolinska Institute in Sweden or in Japan or in Argentina, not only in the US or Canada or the UK. And it was, we wanted to create, so we had the idea in 2010, was the first time, we organized a virtual conference where we had maybe, if I remember correctly, 40, 50 speakers and maybe 300-400 experts and practitioners from all over the world. And it was quite a cognitively challenging and exciting project, but it worked very well. So this is a bit of the summary of the main things we have done and the evolution.
It's a spectacular overview. And you know, at the risk of saying it, I think it's a great case study to look at in terms of putting things together. If I were to draw out a theme there, and you mentioned it a couple times, you really said it's all about adding value, you know, particularly in this area, this emerging area at the time. Now it's really big, and not replicating things that other people had done. Is that a fair characterization? Would you add anything to that?
Absolutely. I mean, it was adding value and obviously to a category, to something that I truly believed would happen and would add a lot of value to people, right? If it's just adding value to something I couldn't care less, then it wouldn't motivate me to do everything else that followed. But I really thought, wow, this is incredible. There's a lot of new things going on in neuroscience that are extremely relevant to every people's lives. It's a tragedy. We ignore neuroscience until it becomes the brain. There's some medical problem and it becomes a medical disease and condition. Why don't we invest in our brains and improve our functionalities every single day? So I clearly saw this is a massive opportunity to improve people's lives, and especially very relevant for two reasons. One, we live longer lives, so the brain and how it ages and how we prolong cognitive functionality is going to make a huge difference in our careers and our happiness and our lives. Second, it was obvious then, even more obvious now, that the world is changing very quickly. So we need to protect that ability to learn, to adapt. And that basically is the brain, right? So it was, well, this is going to be very important. I see many things happening. How can I add value to that emerging field, emerging industry?
Yeah. You've been adding tremendous value. You've been helping others capture some of that value. This is the economist in you, as well as Sharp Brains, right? Is not a nonprofit, is also thinking about how to capture some of the value that you're creating there. So, you know, here I want to dive into a couple of the pieces that you've pointed out there.
Mike, let me interrupt before the question, because you just made a very good comment, which is, of course, it had to work for Sharp Brains. I mean, I was married, and I'm married. We had a daughter, so it has to be financially sustainable. Mm. So I didn't want to do some crazy thing where it's unclear if I would have any money. I also didn't want to raise capital, because then you are kind of at the mercy of the investors and the venture capitalists. So which is why in the beginning, the consulting route allowed me to raise enough revenue that I could create the other things that also I was thinking, well, will they be sustainable financially? And they were, and they are. And that's why it's very important to think about that. How do you do things that add value, but also that even if you don't want to maximize value for yourself, that is good enough to do the things you want to do and to lead the life that you want to lead, the way you open this conversation.
You know, as you point that out, I'm imagining kind of throughout this journey, you're a Sharp guy. As you think about ways that you're going to grow Sharp Brains, add value, you know, and you also worked at McKinsey, you know, was there kind of a framework or a way you evaluated ideas early on and before you kind of pursued them? Is there anything there that'd be useful for people out there who are thinking, I'm thinking about doing this, will it pay in the short term, long term? They really struggle with which areas to go down and where to focus their time.
So I would say, I mean, there was not a systematic formula, but yes, I mean, I had a process. First of all, again, because I was in the middle of the industry and talking to many, many people, I could identify needs, latent needs that people have. And I thought, well, if many people have these latent needs, that's a good sign. And then for those places, those areas where I noticed there were clear needs, I thought, well, what's a clear, obvious solution that can serve those needs? And then frankly, I didn't overthought it. It was, well, let's launch something. Let's launch conference and see how people respond. Let's announce a new report and see if people start to ask questions. So it was a lot of what these days people call design thinking. So, but basically was that. There's a need there. Let's quickly prototype a potential solution that makes sense. Let's socialize it. Let's see what traction it gets. And then let's launch it without spending years and massive investments. And the beautiful thing of our model of market research, consulting, think tank, is that we don't need massive capital, right? If I'm going to do a conference, I mean, it's very simple about, well, I just invite some key speakers and some key sponsors, and we start getting traction with very limited investment. If I'm going to do a report, okay, maybe I have to pay some experts on patents or investments to put everything together, but the investments are relatively limited. So it was very simple to quickly test hypotheses. So but to the key answer to your question then is, well, first of all, have a good sense of needs out there. And second, figure out a way to quickly test any hypothesis you have and see how it works in the real world, and then build on that response.
Beautiful. And I also come from the design thinking world, so I love the way you have summarized that.
You've been listening to 97% Effective with your host, executive coach Michael Winderoth. If this interview is making you think, make sure to share it with a friend. Now, back to our interview.
As you kind of zoom out and you look at that whole journey, and you've shared that with us, and you know this show is about hard truths and paying attention to the evidence, which is what you know your area is. But in this path to becoming the go-to thought leading platform thought leader, is there a hard truth that you would share if you picked one?
Well, there's many.
Pick the top one.
So, maybe hard truth for me personally, though maybe I'm not sure how you define hard truth in this context, but one thing that has been quite frustrating for me for a number of years is that since I run this platform and I have to be free of any conflict of interest, and I have to try to be as objective and a person can humanly be, we are not perfect, but at least try to be, right, as perfect and truthful and objective as possible, I cannot do a number of things that I would love to do. For example, imagine there is a new technology, a new startup, a new scientist that has some very promising approach, and they come to me and say, hey, Alvaro, wouldn't you like to be an early investor or co-founder of this startup, or at least be in the board of the startup, and we give you a lot of stock? I cannot do that because then I will have an obvious conflict of interest that impedes everything else, right? So I've been approached multiple times with invitations like this that I, on one hand, would love to because I love to create things and build things and innovate, but I've not been able to because, again, it would break the fundamental trust and model than we have. So maybe the hard truth is that sometimes you have to truly prioritize and say no to things that you want to do because it destroyed the ultimate thing you are trying to build. And related to that, and maybe this is a kind of something to anticipate the future, is, well, at some point, the way I have described how we have evolved in the last 19 years, well, maybe, who knows, in the last next 10 years, maybe I will figure out a way to combine what we do and to be more hands-on and to help build and grow some of the things that really, I think, deserve them. But I have to, if that happens, I will have to be very transparent and very clear. So I think, I'm not sure if that's one or two or three hard truths, but that's one pain point that I do have and I have been feeling for a while.
Well, it's a hard truth about how you're staying true to the core, right? To be a platform that's being objective about the opportunities and what's happening in this space. And it's front and center, right? You have a strong ethical core, which, yep. That is a whole nother topic, but we don't see very much these days. I almost think here, Alvaro, to not to go too far off topic, but you ought to state that very clearly and boldly somewhere. I think it's one of your strengths on Sharp Brains, the website, because it's like embedded in the fine print on most places, and they're embedding it there because they do have conflicts of interest. But I think that's a really important point, and thanks for pointing that out.
Mike, let me highlight one thing building on that, which is that's so important that it underlies everything else we do. That's the trust. That's the reason why if I invite five prominent experts to speak in a conference, they are super happy to do that. And they don't ask me the typical compensation, massive speaking fees. They would ask some other organizer that if I want to call, I interview anyone for a book, they are more than happy to answer.
So Alvaro, in that first phase of Sharp Brains, the beginnings, you talked about some of the keys to getting it started. You talked about the importance that it needed to be a going concern. You were married, had a daughter at the time. I wanted to ask you here, you had mentioned you did the consulting, so that was a way of identifying clients that would pay. Talk a little bit more about the writing and blogging. It was a new emerging area at the time. Now we're in a very crowded kind of world. And, you know, you hear a lot of you have to just kind of pump out content. It's less about the quality, more about the quantity. You know, if you were starting today and you think about this, I mean, what are keys to producing good content? And you still do that, but it's a really noisy world right now. What type of lessons did you draw back then, or would you apply to now or to those out there who are thinking, I should just start writing and sharing expertise that I have in an area?
So that's a very tough question, because it's really two very different questions. What I did and why 19 years ago or 15 years ago, and what I would do if I had to start now, which, as you say, is a completely different universe. So maybe let me start with what I did then and why, and then we can try to brainstorm about what would be relevant today. So in that moment, it was the beginning of blogging. And as I mentioned, I was having all these conversations with scientists, with investors, with technologists. And then someone suggested, well, why don't you keep a blog so you share some of that knowledge, and that itself creates your brand and your credibility. And I thought, well, that was a very interesting idea. Let's just do it. And frankly, I personally love to read and love to write and to edit. So I was very natural to talk to people and then to write the interview up and then to summarize the key things and to publish that through the blog. And the interesting thing also is that when you write it, I mean, even today, that's very relevant. You have things like Google search, obviously prioritizes good content that many people link to. So basically from the very beginning, since I offer very unique and very high value interviews, the people who care about this, coming from universities, from other bigger blogs for investors, they linked to that, they commented. So it did create a community of people and links that little by little help raise the level of credibility and SEO of the blog and bring a lot of people. And in that era, there was something called blog carnivals. And I'm smiling just remembering that era because it was very fun. It was just, if there were like 10 different blogs of on new health innovation ideas. So every week, a different blog would host the best articles from all these different 10 blogs or 15. I kind of support each other and link to each other. So, and that worked very well. And I was very diligent for a number of years to do these blog carnivals, to publish good blog posts, to also invite other experts to publish through Sharp Brains, and they could contribute articles that in the end, I was the editor-in-chief. So I had to review and to make sure everything was fact-based and they are not trying to promote whatever it is they're trying to promote. But that way, we created a lot of great content, written content. So it was text-based, but that worked very well in that era because of Google search. And this was a new category. So many of the keywords we were using in the conversations, in the interviews, were quite rare then and unique, like neuroplasticity or cognitive reserve or non-invasive neurotechnology or working memory training or stress regulation. So, or even brain teasers. Sometimes we just offer brain teasers to keep it fun and light. And little by little, I notice, wow, that's bringing a lot of traffic, both through links and through Google search. So that has continued to happen, and that worked very well. The one thing that is a key difference between that moment and now is that I think now the main platforms to get a lot of traction are video-based. Can be YouTube, can be TikTok, can be whatever it is. And frankly, I'm not so expert in that, and I have not been so motivated to do that. It's not natural for me. Or for what I think I want to provide, a content a bit deeper, a bit more reflective, that people really learn and go deeper into things that then they can reflect and apply. So I have a bias towards the written vehicle that, again, has been working very well. And if I was starting something like this from scratch, maybe I would partner with someone who really loves video and really loves to talk in the camera and really loves to do that a bit more fast-paced content. And maybe I would prioritize that.
So if we kind of extract here lessons, because you're right, the context, the situation is different 20 years ago than it is today. I mean, I'm hearing you really focused on creating unique and added value in what you were producing, number one. And number two, this idea of the community that helped both promote it, bring credibility, bring traffic, and got kind of the word out there. And sounds like also in some cases, if you don't do something well, how could you partner with someone else who fills that void?
But I agree. And there's maybe one aspect that the community, what is very interesting that when you are creating something at the forefront of anything, and you truly are honestly trying to add value, then the community appears and the community helps you and you help them. So it is very interesting. It is not, if you're trying to do something either the same as everyone else, or you are trying to do it clearly just to benefit yourself, then there's no community that appears to support you, right? But if you truly are adding value to something that is very meaningful, and it is at the frontier of something meaningful, and you truly are doing your best in that, in multiple ways, and in an open manner, then things happen. So that was maybe the analogy with today would be, okay, so it's not so much about video, it would be about, well, what is now the frontier of something that really matters a lot to people, what is working well and what is not, what are the opportunities to add value. So figure out a way to add value in that context, to share that value openly with other people. So whoever it is out there that can connect you. And the beautiful thing these days is that we have the internet and we have a global community in many, many domains. So people find you and they support you and you talk to them and you meet them and you support each other. So I think the two key conditions are, one, find some really thing in the frontier, and two, try to really add honest value to that. And then things happen.
And let me ask you, because the number one thing I hear, and I believe holds people back at this stage, particularly when they have an expertise on a frontier topic, and I'm curious how you respond to this. They will say, you know, if I put those things out there, it's like a trade secret. And, you know, someone else or a big influencer is going to, you know, or a company is going to kind of swoop in, see it, and steal the idea, right? They'll use those words. Which is very contrary to, like, put it out there, get some feedback, see what resonates, and start sharing it, and your reputation builds because of that. How do you think about that? Because you also manage the economic side, and there is the competitive nature going on of capturing and, say, commercializing certain ideas.
Well, first of all, that's a great question. So first, Again, I wasn't trying to build a multi-trillion unicorn, right? So if I was trying to build that, maybe I would have been much more protective and much more. I'm trying to really add value. That's what I want to maximize. I want to maximize adding value with enough financial sustainability to make it worth for my family, for me, short term, long term. But I'm trying to maximize the long term. So I think if people do that, then we have to realize that in most cases, what really matters is not the idea. It is the execution, is the day-to-day leadership, innovation, behavior. That's really what adds value, not the idea. There's million, trillion ideas out there. I mean, one thing that we started doing at some point, I mentioned it briefly earlier, but we had someone from Canada who is an IP, very good IP lawyer, contact us to help us in a number of things with the reports. And then he said, well, these reports are super interesting, but one thing you don't do is you don't analyze what patents are out there, because you analyze them, you can identify very interesting signals from who is patenting what, and you can see what big players and small ones are doing, and what kind of specific applications. But I mentioned patents because, again, there are so many ideas there, and so many ideas are in the public domain that that's not really something that people should be trying to protect very hard. What is very unique is the ability to execute, and the more open you are, and the more inclusive, and the more transparent, typically that helps. Again, in the model I'm describing of let's add value to a new industry, not the I'm going to build a super secretive proprietary technology that I want to raise a lot of venture capital, be stealth for a year, and then go IPO in 3 years. That's a different model. Maybe then you have to be more secretive and protected. But for what I was trying to build, and what I think you are trying to encourage other people in your network community to do, is the opposite. Is share the idea, just focus on the execution.
And this part around execution, thank you for walking through how you think about that. And I think you're right. It does somewhat depend there on the model. As we talk about the execution, and you alluded at the beginning to many of those things that you've done, Alvaro, on that point, the keys to how you launched SharpBrainz, let's take a break. Let's continue next week and dive into strategic actions and activities that you took that enabled you and SharpBrainz to scale and take off. Thank you for joining me today.
Excellent. Well, Mike, thank you so much.
Join me in my next episode of 97% Effective with Alvaro Fernandez, CEO of SharpBrainz, the leading think tank and advisory on brain fitness and applied neuroscience. We'll dive into how Alvaro built a powerful network, got picked up and featured in the media, and ultimately created the go-to hub for all things brain fitness related. See you then.
Thanks for listening to 97% Effective, where we skip happy talk and help you break through and ascend one hard truth at a time. Help others discover this show. Leave a review and rating wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you like what you heard, you can get free resources, including the first chapters of Michael's book, Get Promoted, on his website, www.changwinderoth.com. That's www.changwenderoth.com.
For over 30 years, BHM has been the trusted CPA firm for closely held businesses across Ohio and West Virginia.
BHM has made life easier for myself and our company when it comes to tax and accounting.
At BHM, we develop top talent to tackle your most complex challenges.
A CPA firm can be the lifeblood to a successful business. If you don't feel that way about your firm, ask yourself why not.
Visit bhmcpagroup.com to schedule a consultation. BHM, the CPA firm simplifying the complex.